Good evening. This is KBOO at 90.7 FM. My name is Gabriela Ross. My host is Chris. And tonight's topic is a report from the first conference on homosexuality in Iranian society, which took place a few weeks ago in Los Angeles. And I'm particularly interested in the human rights issues related to how gay, lesbian, bi, and transgender people are treated. So that's what I would like to focus on. And I think people understand this, but just to make sure that the mistreatment of sexual minorities is not a Middle Eastern issue, even though this is what this show will focus on. And to illustrate that, just a few numbers, if you will. The increase in hate crimes against gay, lesbian, bi, and transgender people has grown recently and now outnumbers the crimes against people based on ethnicity. November 20th is Transgender Remembrance Day, and this year had the sad legacy to remember that every month more than two people on average are killed because of being transgender. The vast majority of victims of anti-gay or lesbian violence, probably more than 80%, never report what happened to them because of the fear of being outed in the process. Due to sexual orientation discrimination, lesbians earn about 14% less than their heterosexual female peers with similar jobs, education, age, and residence, according to a study of the University of Maryland. 42% of homeless youth identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual. This is from the Orion Center in Seattle. And you may have heard the news, I think it was last year, where a 7-year-old boy in Louisiana was scolded for using the word gay. He had told a classmate that his mother was gay, and for that he was scolded and forced to write, "I will never use the word gay again," at school. And this has become a case with the ACLU. Locally, it may not always hit the news, but things happen. I do know of a case where a young man has come out to his fundamentalist Christian parents and has told them that he is gay. And their response is, truly, I'm not making this up, their response is to want him to do exorcism. They want to send him to a place where they can have exorcism performed on him. The human rights particularly that are violated internationally towards people who are gay, lesbian, bi, or transgender are, for example, the right to life, the right to physical or mental health, the right to be free from torture or cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment, the freedom from violence and harassment, the freedom of movement, the right to be protected from arbitrary arrest, the right to equality before the law, the right to fair trial, the right to non-discrimination, the right for free expression and free association, the right to choose and live a religion, the right to privacy, the right to social security assistance and benefits, the right to work, the right for education, and the right to form a family. And why don't we... currently, there are 12 countries internationally that have laws calling for death penalty for homosexuality. They include Saudi Arabia and Yemen. And Iran is one of these countries. But before I go into the particular Iranian situation, why don't we play another piece of music real quick? As I said, there are at least 12 countries who have specific regulations relating to homosexuality in their law books. Iran is one of them, and here are some of those articles in Iranian law. Article 110 states, the prescribed punishment for homosexual relations in the case of intercourse is execution, and the mode of the execution is at the discretion of the religious judge. Article 111. Homosexual intercourse leads to execution provided that both the active and the passive party are of age, sane, and consenting. 112. Where a person of age commits homosexual intercourse with an adolescent, the active party shall be executed, and the passive party, if he has not been reluctant, shall receive a flogging of up to 74 lashes. 113. Where an adolescent commits homosexual intercourse with another adolescent, they shall receive a flogging for up to 74 strokes of the whip unless one of them has been reluctant. Article 127 and 134 relate to lesbian sexual relations. Punishment for sexual intercourse among lesbians is 100 lashes, and in the case of recidivity, after 3 times execution. By the way, Iran is a signatory to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. This having legal codes that are so specific about homosexuality obviously creates a specific set of problems. But in addition to that, there are other particular concerns for people from Middle Eastern countries, Iran being one of them. And at the conference in Los Angeles, the conference was organized by Homan, which is an Iranian gay-lesbian organization, I had the chance to interview one of the organizers. And I think we can just listen to her. She will introduce herself and explain a little bit about more about the conference.
Hello, I will ask my guest to introduce herself and then talk about a conference that happened recently in Los Angeles. So why don't you say a little bit about where you are?
Hi, I'm Parande. And Parande Kian, I'm the one of the organizers with Human, which is an Iranian gay and lesbian organization based in California. We originally came to being as a part of a larger international network of Human, which was first established in Sweden in 1991. And the California group used to be a chapter of the larger international network. However, currently, we are, as far as we know, we are the only group actually active anywhere in the world. The group was registered as a nonprofit organization in California in 2003, and our main goal is to generate awareness and understanding about homosexuality and the community of GLBT in the Iranian society, both here in the U.S. and internationally.
And this past weekend, there was a conference here in Los Angeles, and I tried to estimate, but I think there were at least 100 people who attended. Do you want to say a little bit about that conference and the presentations that were offered there?
Sure. The conference was held at UCLA this past weekend on November 8th, and I think actually we had quite a bit more. We had about 180 to 200 participants in the various sessions. And it's the first conference of its kind, as far as we know. And we tried to focus on issues of family and coming out on family, in part because the majority of the community that we're aware of is highly closeted, and it's a topic that sexuality in general is a topic that is taboo in Iranian society and culture, and particularly homosexuality is hardly ever discussed in any shape or form. So we had hoped to open up the discussion, create an opportunity for discourse on homosexuality from different perspectives, cross-generationally, across generations and also across perspectives. So we had organized a few, two panels or three panels, and also we had a film. And we, the other issue aside from problems of coming out on family is an issue of legal status for Iranian homosexuals and those who are fleeing potential persecution in Iran. So those two topics, legal status and family issues, were the two focuses of the program.
And to me, the film was one of the things that were particularly impressive the message. Can you say a little bit about the film?
The film is called I Exist. It's a voices of Middle Eastern gay and lesbian immigrants in the U.S. And the focus of the film, which was produced last year by iBite Productions, based in San Francisco Bay Area. The film is was initially the brainchild of one of our friends who had a particularly hostile confrontation with some of her family members. And the focus of the film is not only on Iranians, but Middle Eastern immigrants in the U.S. And struggles of family and struggles of being recognized as gays and lesbians in their transnational community, whether they're Arabs or Iranians, Muslims or Christians or Jews. And that's, I think, the one of the important messages in that film is, and what I like about it, is that we are able to show the diversity of the Middle Eastern community and the struggles, the similarities and differences and struggles of individuals in their own family environment and in their own community, whether it's the religious community or the national community. So, I think we all felt that it's a really important first step toward articulating some of the issues that Middle Eastern GLBT people face, both, again, here in the U.S. as immigrants, particularly now in light of the hostile attitudes of the U.S. government, but also in the larger community sense of being a part of communities and environments that are not friendly toward GLBT people.
And that seemed was another theme in the conference, was issues around identity or multiple identities. You want to say anything about that?
Sure. I think that's one of the things that so many of us have dealt with for years. You know, some of us immigrated here in the first round of what has now become the trend in American society American political culture of demonizing people of the Middle East. So we were part of the hostage crisis or post-hostage crisis era, and now in the post-September 11, 2001 era, I think people really struggle with choosing their battles, and is it easier or harder to be identified with the Middle Eastern community? Is it better or worse? Do we want the labels? Do we want the labels of being gay, lesbian? That in some ways, some people actually feel that it gives, if you can show that you're outside of the norm of your Middle Eastern culture, you have a better chance of being accepted here in an American setting. So these are battles, these are struggles that people face individually, but also within the community that creates tensions and disagreements among individuals. It provides for a very interesting and dynamic set of interactions, but at the same time, for the individuals, it's not that easy.
Another thing that was impressive for me at the conference is while discussing the difficulty in cultures where this issue is normally not discussed, much less accepted, there were also some elderly people who were family members. But can you say something about that, about the efforts to try and work with family members?
Yeah, I think we did make an effort, especially because we knew a couple of our speakers came from situations where the family had disowned them. We wanted to make sure we also had some positive role models. We feel that that is what is so painfully missing in society, to have really positive role models. And, for example, one of our speakers, he had his older brother on the panel, in part because Iranians in particular feel that the male image is almost sacred, and to accept anybody who's homosexual in that setting is just devastating. So we wanted to have a positive straight male role model on the on one of the panels, and I think and then also a mother of those two brothers who was in the audience, and she received a standing ovation from the crowd, and I think it was just a spontaneous moment of feeling the strong positive connection that these three family members had created was really inspiring. And then we had an Iranian Jewish woman, who lesbian, who came out in a sense publicly in the community that she had grown up in, and then her mother stood up and was cheered by the crowd. Again, a situation that is just unheard of before, and I think for us, we had hoped to create some opportunities to give samplings of possible positive relationships, and so we were just thrilled that these things happened spontaneously, and we did have quite a few very young participants, immigrants, or actually next generation Iranians who were born here, who were in the crowd, who were just thrilled to have these examples of their own community, to see the possibilities, and I think that was really exciting. We had many, again, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, and we were just happy to have those instances of community coming together, and parents and children just showing good, being good role models, good citizens.
And one of the sadder aspects was the information and stories about the real life-threatening concerns for people from the community who are in Iran or who are visiting Iran. You want to say something about that? And that the fact that there actually is a legal code in Iran and in many other Middle Eastern countries specifically targeting gay and lesbians and bisexual people. And then the security risk that involves for people.
Yes, the Islamic Penal Code in Iran prohibits homosexuality, and both men and women who are accused of or are proven to be have been involved in an act of homosexuality, they can be subject to lashes and ultimately subject to death sentence. And this is an issue that becomes a source of not only legal tangling outside of Iran and inside Iran, but also it becomes a source of absolute frustration. The reports we get from Iran, and this is something that came out a little bit during the conference, are about just the difficulty that young people don't really know that it's possible to have a life as a gay or lesbian person, and the threats of being chased or being threatened by the government and by the system in general, knowing that what you are or your life is just not tolerated. It's not considered a life. It's just considered some kind of crime or deviancy that is just unacceptable in any society. So that threat gets magnified when individuals are actually subjects to some kind of legal action inside Iran, and that's and you really see that in when we hear stories from people who have come out of Iran or people who are trying to get refugee or asylum status outside of Iran, and they're not able to, and just the devastation and the struggles with understanding not only their own dilemma in terms of their identity crisis, but also understanding that, or coming to terms with why society doesn't have a place for them. These are all things that are incredibly difficult to handle, even for a very well-balanced individual, emotionally and otherwise well-balanced individuals struggle with these issues, yet alone young people, youth who just don't have any sounding boards. They don't have any place to turn to, and they have to manage and come to terms with these issues, and both the threats on their lives, but also their threats on their well-being and being able to have anything resembling normal life. So we talked about these issues as well.
If people want more information or wanted to contact you, you produce a magazine, right? But you're also available online?
Sure, it's www.homanla.org. And you can email us through that website, or we will be updating it. Right now we have the conference information there, but we'll be updating it shortly.
Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, but we just hope that families, the transnational Iranian community, feels free to reach out to us.
Thanks.
You just listened to an interview with Parane, one of the organizers of Human, who recently put on a conference on homosexuality in Iranian society. And you're also listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. The show is Bread and Roses. And I wanted to say a little bit more about the legal situation. Even though, for example, the law in Iran is pretty explicit about what happens with gays and lesbians, what actually happens often is less clear, because it may happen outside of the courtroom and it may be mixed up with a whole bunch of other issues. Iran has always been in the top 5 of the list of countries in the world for executions, but it is unclear how many of these executions may have resulted from accusations of homosexuality. Amnesty International has reported that some lesbians and gay men in Iran have faced punishments such as execution or lashes for their homosexuality, but they have been extremely difficult to substantiate. Although the Islamic Republic's penal code is clear in its intent for punishment for homosexuals, some courts where people have gone for asylum abroad have argued that none of the executions of homosexuals and lesbians in Iran were carried out on the sole basis of homosexuality. It is true that in most cases a combination of charges are stated to make the case against an accused person stronger and more justifiable. For example, many times political activists are charged with drug and alcohol-related crimes. In addition to the political allegations, homosexuality is often added for older people and adultery for younger ones. The cases of Saadi Sirjani and Farash Zakouri are examples for these charges. These tactics show that for the society it is more acceptable to kill a homosexual or adulterer than executing a political dissident, which in turn makes homosexuals more vulnerable to harsh treatment if they are found to actually be involved in any of these activities. Also, there's things that happen outside of the courtroom. There was a young man at the conference who actually showed x-rays of the bullets he still had in his legs. What happened to him was he was in the street with his partner in Iran. Policemen saw them and I guess figured out they were gay, followed them and fired at them in their car. So he was shot at by police and it never went to court. He was never charged with anything. Nevertheless, he could not seek medical help, because then he would have had to explain how he was shot in the first place. He basically went into hiding for a few months and then came to the U.S. To finally get medical treatment. So a lot of the stuff happens outside of places where it can be documented in ways that other people then could use to apply for asylum based on their sexual orientation. There is a very dramatic lack in documentation. Another thing I want to point out is that homophobia in Iranian and in Middle Eastern communities is not necessarily related to religion only. For example, the Iranian community in Los Angeles, by and large, is not necessarily very religious, but still by and large is very homophobic. And also the issue of the treatment of gay and lesbians is not usually addressed by Iranian activist groups. There's a lot of silence around these issues and there aren't very many straight allies. There are other issues that are particular to gays and lesbians from Iranian and other Middle Eastern communities. One is family, the overwhelming importance of family. And I will talk about that some more when I talk about the film. Then Parane mentioned the fact that people are already stigmatized for being Middle Eastern, so that there's this additional identity issue. The homosexuality in itself very often is looked at, in, for example, in Iran, as a Western concept. So the belief is that it doesn't really exist in Iran. It was somehow imported from the West, that somehow the idea that people have this individual freedom is a Western concept and therefore shouldn't be accepted to begin with. The flip side of this assertion is a more romantic view that based on there being references to being gay or lesbian in Persian literature, there's this belief that maybe there's more gays in Iran than any place else. What I think is probably true is that internationally there is about 10% of the population that's gay or lesbian, and that in some communities that may be more or less obvious depending on social norms and legal situations. And some of the references that are made in the literature are actually not about being gay or lesbian. They are about pedophilia. And as a counselor, I have some strong beliefs about having sex with minors, even if it's consensual. You're still, if you're an adult having sex with a minor, you're still abusing your position of power and haven't been more experienced and being more able to manipulate somebody who's younger. And I do, from what my observation has been, that there seems to be confusion maybe everywhere, but particularly in the Iranian community, about the difference between that and being gay or lesbian. It's not the same thing, and I don't believe that there is a higher percentage of child abusers in the gay or lesbian community. I do believe there's a higher percentage of child abusers in any community that oppresses sexuality, such as Catholic priests. During the conference, the film I Exist was premiered. It's actually not quite out for release yet. It is supposed to be released later this month. And I want to just read an opening statement from the people who made this film. There are over 4 million Middle Eastern people living in the United States. From the first wave of immigrants in the early 1800s, Middle Easterners in the U.S. have experienced a lack of visibility and have been broadly misunderstood. More recently, there is a duality in the notion of what it means to be from the Middle East. One perspective is through the lens of the exotic and mysterious. It draws people to the richness of food, language, art, poetry, and beauty of people from a region far away. The other is that of the hated and feared terrorist image created in Hollywood films and perpetuated in print and television media, especially following the tragedy of September 11. Homophobia is in any culture at very least destructive, at worst deadly. Being feared and hated for who you are, for who you love, and what you value can be devastating. If the statistics showing that 10% of all people are homosexual are applied, then at least 400,000 people of Middle Eastern origin living in the U.S. are lesbian, gay, or bisexual. The film illustrated the very high importance of family for probably the majority of people from Iran or other Middle Eastern country. And that, of course, can become very problematic if your family, for one thing, doesn't even know what it is, what homosexuality means, what it is, confuses it with child abuse or some other kind of illness. For Middle Eastern people living in the United States, the family community is the most often the only source of one's language, traditions, history, food, and religious practices. For Middle Eastern Americans, the family circle is a space that helps maintain a cultural identity despite the negative and oppressive stereotypes in the U.S. media and society. The families represent deeply rooted values and traditions that have been passed on through generations and that keep every cousin and uncle and grandparent connected from one to another. One of the people in the film said, "Every moment I feel that I'm in this web, every action I do is not just about me. Every time I make a move, the web shakes," referring to his extended family, not just his parents. For Middle Eastern lesbians and gays, this family network is both a refuge and a potential threat. Middle Eastern families value the way they are perceived by the outside community as critical. For a family to have a lesbian or gay child invokes immediately issues of failure, shame, and guilt. For Middle Eastern lesbians and gays, this alone could leave them silenced, too afraid to bring public shame on themselves and on their family.